This is the first burning of Jerusalem in the story of the city that we seek to tell. It will, of course, not be the last. But fascinatingly, the very excavation of the burnt princely home from the fall of Jerusalem revealed something else, that almost immediately after Jerusalem's destruction, Jews returned to rebuild. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 29, The Ashes of Eternal Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. You have probably seen how, as part of my launching Jerusalem 365, I have convened a series of brief conversations on the subject of what Jerusalem means to me. One recent discussion was with Representative Richie Torres, a courageous and eloquent defender of Israel in Congress. Congressman Torres described one of the profoundly moving moments of his life, visiting the city of David and holding in his hands ashes left over from the burning of Jerusalem. Congressman Torres then quipped to me that he now has the holiest hands in Congress. It was striking to me because the congressman took this symbol of ancient destruction and also found in it extraordinary inspiration. And this is apt, for the archaeology of Jerusalem's destruction reveals not only the terribly sad nature of the inferno that swept the city, but also the inspiring essence of Jewish eternity. Soon after Zedekiah refuses to heed Jeremiah's advice, disaster descends. Thus we are told as the book of Kings draws to a close. And in the fifth month, on the seventh day of the month, which is the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, a servant of the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem. And he burned the house of the Lord and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem. And every great man's house burnt he with fire. And all the army of the Chaldeans that were with the captain of the guard broke down the walls of Jerusalem round about. Now the rest of the people that were left in the city and the fugitives that fell away to the king of Babylon with the remnant of the multitude, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, carried away. This is the first great destruction occurring in Jerusalem on the month of Av, the month of Jewish mourning. Of course, it will not be the last moment that Jews in Jerusalem are burned in fire in this month. Today, one need not only read about this event to experience it, one can touch it. As a video from the City of David describes, and we have sent you the link, excavations in what is called today the Givati parking lot in what was once ancient Jerusalem have uncovered a royal home from precisely this period, along with the ashes from the fire that swept across it, so that one can truly hold in one's hand the ashes of the fire that burned Jerusalem. It is striking to look at the video, to study this once stately home, because it is exactly as the Bible describes what occurs to Jerusalem. Every great man's house burned in fire. And there is an especially eerie element to it, for as we have seen, it was precisely the quote-unquote great men, the ministers or princes of Jerusalem, that were most hell-bent on destroying Jeremiah, denying his message, assuring Jerusalem and the king that all would be well. And in the end, it was their homes that we'd see now suffused by the flames. The ashes of Jerusalem that we can still touch are, for us, an extraordinary symbol of ancient pain. As Rosella Tersatin put it in the Jerusalem Post, quote, "What would happen if archaeologists could excavate tears, looking at burned stones and beams clearly visible in the ruins of a building recently exposed at the excavation known as the Givati parking lot while touring the site? I could not help asking myself the question," end quote. And yet, this is not the only incredible archaeological discovery that is linked to this moment in 586 BCE. I happened to chance on a report in all of the Israeli papers about the field known as archaeomagnetism, a sort of union of physics and archaeology. This is applied to the remnants of Jerusalem from the very same moment when it was burnt by the Babylonians. Apparently, the stone floor of one of these houses that belonged to the elite of Jerusalem became magnetized in the midst of the awful inferno. And this apparently allows the site to serve as a scientific gold mine of information for those studying magnetic fields in existence. I quote portions of a piece from the Times of Israel, quote, "The Bible and pure science converge in a new archaeomagnetism study of a large public structure that was raised to the ground on Tisha B'Av 586 BCE during the Babylonian conquest of Jerusalem. The resulting data significantly boosts geophysicists' ability to understand the holy grail of earth sciences, earth's ever-changing magnetic field," according to Hebrew University's Shar, co-author on the study. "The magnetic field is generated by chaotic electrical and fluid currents at the Earth's core. We geophysicists are trying to understand how it changes with the time, because it is constantly changing, and we are trying to understand why and what are the mechanisms that drive the changes, end quote. The point, ladies and gentlemen, is that intensities of magnetic fields change over time, and scientists seek to track these changes. However, magnetic fluctuations have only been charted for 100 years, and though magnetic artifacts have been found, we have no way of precisely dating them and knowing the exact moment their magnetic forces reflect. But if you are looking at a burnt floor that was torched by Babylonians 2,500 years ago, you can take that charred, magnetized substance and know that the magnetic reading within it dates precisely to on or around the 9th of Av, 586 BCE, when the temple was destroyed. You will know when that magnetic field was conceived, when it was brought into being, because you know the precise moment in time when the temple and the surrounding city was burned. Thus, the article further tells us, quote, "In the new study published in the PLOS-1 Scientific Journal, lead author and archaeologist Yoav Vaknin harvested data from pieces of floor from a large two-story building excavated in the City of David's Givati parking lot. Minerals embedded in the dozens of floor chunks were heated at a temperature higher than 932 degrees Fahrenheit, 500 degrees Celsius, and magnetized during the slash and burning of ancient Jerusalem, and therefore offered up geomagnetic coordinates," end quote. Even for those of us who are not scientists, it is endlessly fascinating because I think it is an alluring image, a motherlode of magnetic force, a powerful pole of attraction, captured within the ruins of Jerusalem from millennia ago, born in the midst of the flames, something enduring created during that terrible destruction. This is sublimely symbolic because we Jews do believe in a sort of magnetism that was created right in the middle of that fire, a powerful force field that attracts spirit to spirit, Jew to divine presence. And if we have two incredible archaeological remnants in the very same site left from Nebuchadnezzar's destruction of Jerusalem, the ashes of destruction on the one hand, and the magnetization of the moment on the other, then, taken in tandem together, they create a profound metaphor. Rabbi Norman Lamb once reflected on the meaning of the mysterious rabbinic comment that the Messiah was conceived on the day that the temple was destroyed. The point, he said, was that the roots of Jewish redemption lie in the longing and love that was brought into being on the day Jerusalem was destroyed. Nebuchadnezzar's forces did succeed in destroying the city, but as they led the Jews into exile, we know that one location remains on their minds. So we are told in the Psalms, "By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hung our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, Sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I prefer not Jerusalem above my chiefest joy." Placing Jerusalem above one's chiefest joy is the motivation of a minhag, a tradition, to place ashes on the head of a groom at his wedding. Today, an exquisite development is that of many grooms seeking to retain ashes from the city of David, ashes of Jerusalem itself, to place on their heads as they are married and as, under their chuppah, the return to Jerusalem is described. Thus, in an astonishing symmetry of science and mysticism, what was captured, what was conceived in the midst of the fiery inferno that was once the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, was a magnetic force the likes of which had never been detected before. It was not merely a magnetism of metal, but also a connection of mind and soul. I know little of the physical phenomena behind these scientific forces, but I know that more than metal was magnetized in the flames of Jerusalem. What was created was an invisible force field connecting Jews to God, spanning space and time. A force that, like magnetism, was unseen and yet so powerful that Nebuchadnezzar could do nothing to overcome it. It is this force that has remained with us, dating back to the date and time of 9 Av 586 BCE. To say that the Messiah was conceived on that day is to say that in the midst of physical destruction came spiritual rebirth. In the midst of agonizing desolation and separation came also spiritual union and the seeds of redemption. This is the first burning of Jerusalem in the story of the city that we seek to tell. It will, of course, not be the last. But fascinatingly, the very excavation of the burnt princely home from the fall of Jerusalem revealed something else, that almost immediately after Jerusalem's destruction, Jews returned to rebuild. The article by Rosella Tersaten in The Post cites archaeologist Yuval Gadot, quote, "We were intrigued to discover that later on during the 5th century BCE, people came back to Jerusalem and established themselves in the ruins, cleared out part of the structure and settled inside it, which we take as an indication of the poor state in which both them and the city found themselves at the time," he explained. Artifacts uncovered from this period include coins and pottery vessels, as well as modest quality construction materials. The article goes on, "Were those people Jews returning to their promised land after the exile and driven to settle where their ancestors had lived and thrived? Or perhaps members of the small group of Jews allowed to remain? At this juncture, it is impossible to say with certainty," end quote. Thus, the burning of Jerusalem is followed by rebuilding, destruction by defiance, profound pain by loyalty and love. This ethereal magnetic field, drawing us to Jerusalem, endows Jews with an identity that is mysterious to many, but science and archaeology provide a metaphor that allows us to better explain it. It is a metaphysical magnet, linking Jews to Jerusalem, to God, to each other. A force born in destruction, but a guarantor of Jerusalem's future. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Signing off.